We're finishing up our conversation about the special prosecutor announcing yesterday that there will be indictments against at least three of the officers in addition to Jason Van Dyke. How far up the food chain does this go? It's not just that Van Dyke fired on Laquan McDonald fatally, shot him multiple times, and then was reloading as the body lay motionless on the ground. The galling thing about what happened yesterday is that they're going to charge these other officers because it looks like they were conspiring to hide the crime. That is, they were writing reports that did not reflect what happened in real life, and we know that now because we've got the video. We didn't used to have the video. Now we got the video. And what they are saying in the report, the allegation is, the prosecution is saying, is quite different than what happened in fact. So there's this code of silence. We talked a little bit about it before the news. There's an interesting quote in the story. It says, this really does send a message. Here's a quote from Christopher Smith, an attorney who represented two former officers who were in a similar situation. That is, events happened different than what the cops were saying. And these guys were a bit of the whistleblowers. They were saying, no, that's not exactly what happened. They went to the FBI. So their attorney says this. This really does send a message that you could be charged just for sitting back, even if you are not the primary actor. Christopher Smith is on the phone right now. Hey, Chris, it's John Williams, and you're on WGN. How are you?
Good.
So,
thank you, John.
But that's... you're not saying that's a bad thing, right? Or maybe you are, that if officers don't pull the trigger, they're just witnesses to it. They could be charged with crimes as well. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it's a good thing. It's a little more than just sitting back. It's also about lying and not telling the truth and exposing when something goes down that shouldn't have gone down. And that's a really big step in dealing with the problems that are the result of the code of silence in the Chicago Police Department.
Yeah.
Because officers on the streets are going to have to think twice before they fill out a false report just to protect their fellow officers.
Do you think there's still a code of silence within the CPD?
Absolutely. A code of silence, everyone in law enforcement, except for the Chicago Police Department before recently, will admit there's a problem with a code of silence. It's universal to law enforcement. Our problem was so big that the way that the higher-ups would deal with the code of silence was to pretend it didn't exist. That was just a theory in a movie. And that just shows how enforced the code of silence was, that top to bottom, the Chicago Police Department fell in line on the code of silence.
You represented a couple of officers who went to the FBI because they said, wait a minute, the report that we're involved in is different than what actually happened. They told it to the FBI. What happened to those officers when they crossed the line?
Well, they were retaliated against. The other flip side of a code of silence is not just being silent, but when you cross it and actually go against your fellow officer, you are now the enemy and will be treated as the enemy. And they were completely ostracized and even put at jeopardy if they were to do the job, that they wouldn't be backed up and even directly threatened in that instance. During the course of their lawsuit, the mayor finally came forward and said there is a code of silence problem within the Chicago Police Department.
What happened to what was the outcome of the case in which you were working with those two officers?
Ultimately, it settled for $2 million.
The city paid your clients $2 million?
Inclusive of fees.
Sure, I get that, but that was the amount. That's the number.
Yes.
Interesting. So then when you see this, you must be encouraged by what Patricia Bound Holmes was doing yesterday, saying that's not going to be tolerated anymore. And here are charges not just against Van Dyke, but against March and Gaffney and Walsh, et cetera.
Yes, the secondary line of indictments is really important to preventing officers from feeling like they can just continually lie. And it also gives the officers who want to be able to tell the truth some traction to say, hey, I'm not going to get brought down with you on this one.
I just wanted to ask you, I know that you're not directly involved in this case, but obviously you have an informed opinion about this sort of thing. And in the Chicago Tribune today, they say that the investigation detailed a meeting at police headquarters among the top brass about 10 days after the McDonald shooting. Among those at the meeting was Eddie Johnson, then a deputy chief, who later went on to be superintendent. And of that meeting, Lieutenant Oswaldo Valdez told the investigator general's office, everybody agreed that Officer Van Dyke used the force necessary to eliminate the threat, and that's pretty much it. Johnson disputes that, but so they have a meeting. They all look at it, and it sounds like everybody was putting the rubber stamp for the Chicago police on that. I wonder what your opinion is about how high up a case like this should go.
Well, it's interesting that in the papers, Dan Herbert, the attorney for Van Dyke, echoes that sentiment. He says that, when you look at this, these three officers are being charged with something that went all the way up the entire command staff. That's not really a defense, but that's basically saying why wouldn't they all be charged if these three gentlemen are going to be charged? So now he's trying to shed light on the fact that we're not treating everybody the same. But that's a question that needs to be asked. What was the reason you stop at that level?
Well, sure, because
these three individuals and the next level who was there, watched the video, and participated in that process. But that doesn't excuse the behavior of the three individuals who were charged.
No, but you'd like to think that institutionally, the fail-safe, the safeguard we have is that while these officers are worried about their lives on the line, out in the street, maybe some of the higher-ups will do the right thing. I mean, the higher-ups weren't there. They see the report. They see the video. And evidently, they didn't red flag it. They didn't. Nothing was going to happen if maybe we don't see that video. I mean, really, it seems to me like they have a grave responsibility too.
Well, certainly, and with respect to the prosecution and the indictments here, that's only one part of dealing with the code of silence. The other part of it has to come from the police department and its an internal affairs division wanting to be an entity that breaks the code of silence rather than supports it, as well as having an independent review of police activities that's given the power to be effective.
Christopher Smith, civil rights attorney in Chicago, has worked on a case like this before. Not exactly like this, but you get the drift, and I appreciate your time today. Christopher, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
It's 149. This is WGN.